Welcome to It's Bloody Complicated, the Compass podcast. I'm Neil Lawson, your host and director of Compass. These are unprecedented times, and we need to rise to the new and enormous challenges we now face. Over the next few weeks, we'll be speaking with writers, thinkers, politicians, journalists, and public service workers about how we come out of this mess in much better shape than we went in, a good society after COVID-19. These conversations have live access for Compass members who can put their own questions directly to our guests. If you'd like to participate in the live call and help support all of our work, go to compassonline.org.uk/podcast to join Compass today. Otherwise, sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's podcast. Joining us this week on the Compass podcast, It's Bloody Complicated, are Hardeep Mathuru, editor of Byline Times, and Priyanka Ravel, who's the reporter at the wonderful Bristol Cable. So, Hardeep and Priyanka, it's great to have you both here on the podcast. We start, as we always do, with where are you and how are you? I'm guessing, Priyanka, you're in Bristol. Am I guessing that right?
You are guessing that right. Yeah, couldn't be anywhere else working for the Bristol Cable.
And how are you in a real, like, in the new year? How are you doing? Are you facing up to 24 with zest?
Yeah, I feel hopeful, energized. Trying not to be worn down by the print deadlines we have at the moment, but you know, pretty good on the whole.
Fantastic. And Hardeep, where are you and how are you?
I am very well, thank you. I am talking to you from the University of Westminster in London. I'm at the Democracy Network's two-day conference. So I've just spent the afternoon doing a panel about independent media and democracy. So yeah, it's really good to have these discussions about this issue because I think it's going to be a big one this year in particular.
Yeah, we'll get into all of that. Do you want to keep going, Hardeep? And just tell us a bit about Byline Times, its position, its history, you know, politically where it places itself and why people should subscribe to it. And Peter, find the thing for people to subscribe to, both of the, you know, the details of both the organizations if you can, and put them in the chat. So you go first, Hardeep. You know, tell us a bit about Byline.
Yeah, thanks, Neil. So Byline Times was founded 5 years ago, coming up now, by Peter Jukes and Stephen Colgrave. They are the executive editors of the newspaper, and I am the editor, founding editor. I've been there as long as they have with them. And it's a free daily investigative news site with breaking news stories. And it's also a monthly print edition newspaper. It has been since it started. It was always has been a subscription offer. So people have been subscribing for 5 years to our monthly print edition, which they've always got through their letterboxes or their inboxes, digital or print. About 3 months ago, we also launched the Byline Times print edition into retail. So now you can get it in selected WH Smith, Waitrose, Sainsbury's, soon to be Marks and Spencer's, and all good independent news agents. The model we found has worked really well is subscriptions. So reader funded. I think that means that you have a lot of transparency, which is baked into the process of how people are getting the journalism they are from us. And I always say, if we ever deviate from being independent in how we approach stories, and that's not only being politically independent, but being outside of the system of the established press, and also being independent of thought in how we're presenting what we're giving to readers. If we ever stop doing that, then readers can stop funding us via subscriptions. And I think that is really important for us. It's really helped us build a connection with our readership. I do think journalism today at its best has to be on the level with the reader. It has to be for them and relevant to their lives and the world around them. So we've built a real community with Byline Times. It's not just a news site or a newspaper, it's also a community. And from the beginning, I mean, when we launched 5 years ago, a lot of people thought we were kind of crazy, especially to launch a print edition when circulations of very established titles have been falling for a number of years. And we said, well, it's not crazy if you can identify where there is an appetite. And so we don't follow the news cycle, you know, the 24/7 social media charged, politically driven news cycle. You can go literally everywhere else For that, we focus on investigations and analysis that you won't be able to find elsewhere. We want to look at the issues that the established press can't or won't report on. And our founding mission really is to also scrutinize the established press, the very influential news outlets in this country that do have a lot of power, not just in terms of the extent to which they do or do not hold power to account, but how they help shape our culture, you know, the stories that we tell ourselves about who we are, our society, our politics, that is very much mediated through the press. And so you can visit bylinetimes.com to get a subscription that does fund all of our work. We have a very small in-house team. We have a political editor and a chief reporter who work with me, and as I said, two executive editors myself. Really small team, really efficiently run. We have hundreds of contributors on top of that. And really, it's just been an unexpected journey, but it has left me hopeful that there is a real appetite for investigative journalism and for those principles of journalism in a democracy that traditionally the media at its best performs. The problem is, in recent years, there has been a merger essentially in our analysis between politics and the media. So you're not getting that scrutiny. And I think we've seen, particularly in recent years, the real life consequences of that.
Fantastic. I love it so much. I subscribe to it. I love Peter Oborne, what he writes in the paper. And we particularly love Josiah, who writes about all of our issues incredibly well. So it's a fantastic thing. So everyone on the call and listening to the podcast, it's a great thing. So over to the Bristol Cable. Tell us all about that, Priyanka, and what its history is and what its purpose is and what it's trying to do and achieve.
Yeah, sure. So the Bristol Cable was started in 2014 with a mission to redefine local journalism using a cooperative business model. So similar to the subscriber model, except that for, I mean, the way the cable run is quite unique and distinct in that to be a member, you only have to pay £1 a month minimum, and then you kind of effectively own a share in the cable. And that's what helps us keep. That's what helps keep us independent. So at the moment, so from starting in 2014 to now, we now have over 2,500 members, and I think it's actually increased in the past couple of months as well. We're still 60% grant funded by philanthropic organizations, but 40% member funded. And ideally, we're looking to flip that on its head, so we are predominantly member funded. And yeah, exactly as Hardeep said, I think this forms a really important function in terms of accountability. Like we had this slogan that if you buy in, we can't sell out. And that's true.
Yes.
And, you know, the other way that we work as a cooperative is that it kind of functions as we have different levels of participation. So it's not like editorial decision by committee, because that would just like, that would be impossible and drive everyone crazy. But we have, AGMs, which are like not stuffy AGMs, but you know, like an opportunity for our members to get together, reflect on what they think of the editorial content, what they would like to see being reported on more, like an opportunity to feed in terms of what we're doing for our coverage. You can also stand to be a director of our board if you're a member, and any kind of big organizational decisions that we want to make as a cable, we want to make at the cable, we have to consult the members first. So I think what our model really allows us to do is make our members feel truly like they are participating and not just consuming the media that we create. And yeah, so we're a quarterly print paper, free to access. Around 20,000 copies go all around the city. And then we have a website. Nothing is behind a paywall, and quite deliberately, we want it to be as accessible as possible. We're tiptoeing into the more multimedia kind of sphere of things, but we're definitely a bit old-fashioned in the way we do things, I guess, at the cable. And yeah, I mean, we're pretty shoestring, right? We were working in a literal shoebox, I think, like a couple of years ago. Have gone into a slightly bigger office now, We're about 10 members of staff, four of us reporters, but have kind of managed to punch above our weight despite of that. Probably because I think people are really interested in having a model for local media which is so different and which offers such like democratic potential for people in the city and no reliance on advertisers or funders or and I think especially in Bristol that difference was really apparent with like we've only got really Bristol Live, which is owned by Reach PLC, and then Bristol 24/7, and our colleague, our fellow journalists at Bristol Live were getting laid off in quite significant numbers, and we're lucky at the cable that we don't have to worry about that as much.
And just is it been has it been re replicated in other in any other cities? Are there kind of sort of sister outputs that are similar to the Bristol Cable?
Yeah, that's also what's been so heartening about the cable is that we're part of the Public Interest News Forum, and we've also helped a lot of other places set up a cooperative in their cities as well. So at the moment, we're working with I think the latest one is an organization in Leicester, but there's also the Ferret, the Manchester Mill. There is one in Glasgow as well. So yeah, I think there is a bit of a snowball effect as well.
Okay. And Hardy, what's the best thing about working for Byline Times? What makes it a joy? What's easy? And what are the real difficult challenges as you see them? And you answer the same question if you can, Priyanka.
I think I never take for granted that my work is funded by the people. And
No.
I always say that journalism is a responsibility and a privilege of a job to have. In my view, too much of it is not seen as that by journalists. But at its best, it is about readers and about their lives and about the world around them. And to know that I am sort of serving the public in that sense is extremely fulfilling. Recently, about 3 months ago, we launched into retail, as I said. So we have 37,000 subscribers across our print and digital subscription. And we now have about 6,000 copies selling in retail. And when we first, the first month we were in retail, you sort of need to sell enough. You need to show the demand is there in order to come back in those same shops month after month. And so the first time we did it, we had to sort of implicitly say to our readers and our supporters, look, you've got to go out and buy this physically in the shops if you want to keep us there. And I was just blown away by the response. I mean, people were driving miles and miles, hours in their cars to find these copies and buy them to keep us in the shops, which we now are in regularly because enough copies were sold. And there is something about, I'm genuinely moved by that. And I was speaking to someone about this, and they said, but that's because if you have your readers back, they've got your back. And I think building that relationship with the readership is really important. And for me, that comes from local journalism. I mean, I did a law degree, then trained as a journalist, and I was a cub reporter. I was at a local newspaper, and I used to go and talk to people about the potholes and the crime rates and the hospital that was always threatening to be shut down. It's about the readers and being on the level with them, and I have never really forgotten that. The other thing that I think is a real highlight is the level of freedom that I have as an editor, that our journalists have. And what I mean by that is because we're funded by the readers, there isn't an area that we can't readily go into. We follow the story wherever it goes. But I also think that we just provide some space. So we're able to provide people with context, not just what's happening, but why is it happening? We can join the dots and try to bring some depth to the structural issues that I think are often being overlooked in the 24/7 media landscape and by the more established newspaper titles. So in order to work somewhere where you can explore the complexity and explore why things are happening and the ideas that we're thinking with, not just the ideas we're thinking about, it's really rewarding. And I had to, like many journalists I work with, I had to make a decision to leave the mainstream media in order to do Byline Times, because I didn't feel that there was enough space or encouragement of that in the established press. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people working in there do feel that too. They just don't feel they have any options to shift to something else.
And just sort of briefly, what's the toughest thing about the job?
Sorry, the toughest thing. Yeah, I mean, fine, economically, economic times are tough. We do have a robust financial model through subscriptions, but we never take that for granted. So you have to be really aware that you have to sort of sell subscriptions in order to keep going. I think also just we're outside of the system, which is why we're Byline Times, but also that means there's still a huge amount of, to be honest, snobbery from this very closed club of a lot of the established press, where I still think we're not given the credit sometimes and the support from the established media that we deserve. We've taken 5 years to build our credibility, and I'm still shocked by how many people, I mean, few and far between, but still, oh, what is this left-wing rag? I mean, but no one wants to talk about it. It's like a taboo talking about the snobbery in the mainstream media. It's also something no one talks about, which I find really interesting. So I guess in a way, getting our stories out there, getting our brand awareness out there, where we're always still struggling against the more established players in this industry, who find us a bit annoying at times, I think.
Well, it's good they're annoying. And let me, if you haven't, if listeners, haven't looked at the product yet, the production and the quality of the writing is just absolutely fantastic, which I'm sure it is at the Bristol Cable. So tell us the highs and lows of working there and doing the job, Priyanka. What do you love about it most, and what's hardest in terms of churning these things out, 4 times a year?
Yes, it's a good question. I think one of the things I love about it is the fact that I get to work in Bristol. I was born and raised here. I'm really passionate about this city, and I really believe actually in the power of local journalism. And I think when I came back to Bristol and I started out, I was really worried that I would be bored, or that, you're working on real small fry issues. And I've actually come to find that there is real value in that really deeply unsexy reporting, like when a cable event, for example, of getting a lot of people in a room and talking about transport issues and, spending a whole Saturday talking to people who live in the suburbs, like old people who can't get in because the bus routes are so bad. Like it's not glamorous, a lot of local journalism, but it just feels so important because I think underserved communities is a bit of a cliche, but I think that's exactly it. You get to listen to people and make people who don't often see themselves in mainstream media feel like their concerns and voices really matter. And I do think that, in the last 14 years, we've lost 400 local newsrooms, something like that. And that is such a democratic deficit, in our media landscape, because what we can do as local journalists is you can build relationships, you can grow contacts. In a way, it's much easier. Your Bristol is 700,000 people. What who you get to develop a kind of expertise and an areas in your patch and your contacts and your sources, like much, much easier, I think. And then you have this really valuable element of the cable, which has always been like really coded into the DNA of the cable, which is that it's community organizing as well and community building, whether it's through like our events or the campaigns that we've done. And actually, that is one of the things I'm most proud about the cables, that we can do campaign journalism. We ran this campaign called Boot Out Bailiffs, which it was campaigning against the Bristol City Council's use of bailiffs. And it was a successful campaign. And now they have subscribed to a more ethical debt collection model. Or, another example is that terrible thing happened in November where one of the oldest council estates in the city called Barton House was evacuated, but the residents were given almost no notice and kind of made homeless because there were fears about the building's structural safety, but it was handled in such a bad way. And, there were the families who were forced out in within hours. And the Bristol Cable managed to launch a crowdfunder, which made 10 grand by in 4 days. And so I think when you're a local journalist, yeah, you're not just reporting on things, you're in it with people, you're at the events, and you also get to make at strategic points important interventions that back up your reporting in terms of holding people to account. And yeah, and it also does help that every now and again, Bristol, because of its spirit, we do get some sexy stories. You know, Men Colson comes down, or you know, the Killer Bill riots, which is actually a really important story, which we're still looking into. And we get to be on the forefront of these like national stories in Bristol in a way that I think really does like spice up the job. But I love it. Yeah.
But you're avoiding the tough question as well. What's the tough bit about the job?
Right. The tough bit about the job, I think, is similar. It's just that the lack of resources can feel really, really frustrating. How we are 10 people and 4 reporters trying to cover a whole city. And, you know, all of us at one point have literally gone door to door handing out copies of the paper. So, you know, it's nice in that we all muck in and do everything, but sometimes it does feel a bit like, God, if we had more resources, we could do so much. We could make so much more impact. And we've got this winning model, but we don't have the capacity to get the word out there as much as we would like to, or reach as much as we'd like to, because we're always doing a million things at once.
Yeah, I get that. I know what that feels like. Do
Yeah.
you have any questions you've got for our two guests in the Q&A? I'm going to keep going for a bit longer. We might come back to that resources thing. So let's just think about you. I know you're neither of you have been, your papers are kind of party political at all. And I don't know so much about the Bristol Cable about where you locate yourself, but Byline Times is definitely on the kind of progressive side of politics, even if it's not for a party. How do you locate yourself, and what do you think about, both right-wing press, media, in particular TV? It's interesting that, the right have got lots of platforms, but they particularly got, TV platforms, and progressives don't have really TV. What do you think about the right media, and what do you think about, TV? And I'm obviously thinking about, GB News in particular. Ardeep, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think describing Byline Times as progressive is a good way to see it. I think what we've been really keen not to replicate is, I think, a big problem with the established press, particularly the more right-leaning newspapers, is they're telling the public constantly what to think, based on what the proprietors and the editors what would like them to think. And so at Byline Times, what we want to do is hold power to account. So in recent years, there's been a lot of scrutiny of the Conservative Party. That's not to say that if there was a Labour government, we wouldn't scrutinise a Labour government. But I think it's the manner in which you do it. So we want to provide our readers with new investigations, new information, new knowledge, from which they can sit back and think about, well, what is happening? You know, we're pointing out structurally what's going wrong and how that fits with politics, with culture, with society. And then we want readers to come to their own conclusions, really. We don't want to tell them what to think. We don't want to say, you know, this is it's definitely this and it's definitely that. Because I think that doesn't promote a pluralistic approach. It can become quite polarized. I think the right-wing media, it is very, I mean, all their sound bites and sort of what they're telling the readers to think, it is the sort of original polarization. That has then been amplified, as you're talking about, on digital platforms, you know, whether that's Twitter and how much that now drives the sort of mainstream news agenda, even though vast swathes of the public have nothing to do with it. I think it sets the agenda a lot for the influential newspapers. And then, of course, you've got broadcasters, which are now popping up, like GB News, which are not independent to my mind at all. I mean, they're very much supported by politicians. Priti Patel, our former Home Secretary at the Conservative Party conference last year, gave a round of applause for our friends at GB News. GB News is a channel which has serving Conservative MPs who are interviewers. on this channel. So the notion that it's independent and just providing an alternative that's, getting a real conversation going, I think has to be questioned. But I think what outlets like GB News really feed off of is this polarization that has always existed to some extent in our right-leaning media, which has been amplified by social media and social media platforms. And I think the aim is to sort of shift the culture. We've had a lot more talk about kind of culture war issues that weren't really that prevalent in this country. A lot of people say America has always had an element of that in recent years. Well, the UK hasn't, but I think there is an appetite for right-leaning outlets to stir those culture wars up. So we try to, at Byline Times, we're trying to be very distinct from that, but not fall into the trap of saying it's definitely this or it's definitely that. We're saying we're going to do the scrutiny, we're going to do the investigation, and you should look at this. Also, I think that's important because if journalism at its best is a pillar of our democracy, we need to try and help create an informed citizenry. And I think that is about people getting their information and then processing it and having the agency to look at what they think about that. As I said, everything on social media and a lot of too much of the established press is this is what you should think about this issue. And there's very little scrutiny of those outlets, which are saying to their readers that they know best, based on what?
Isn't it frustrating that that we're not polarizers, we're pluralists, and we always say it's bloody complicated and it's nuanced. Wouldn't you don't you just want to let rip sometimes and go, it's really clear, these are the bad people, these are the good people. It's kind of frustrating that we can't do that for all the reasons that you say. And you can answer that, which was just a blurb, not a real question. But like so, and the maybe just finish on this bit, Hardy, before we go to Bianca. Are a bit the ability of progressive media outlets to lead the news, because that's what GB News is starting to do. It's not really a TV station, it's a social media station that clips what they do, puts it on social media, and begins to lead, and push the debate. Could we be better at that collectively, not just you, but Compass and every progressive organization?
Yeah, just very briefly, I think you're right in terms of nuance. That's one of my favorite words. It's complicated. Yes, it really is. I think what Byline Times does take a stance on is corruption. We're against corruption, against denigration of the rule of law, for example. So there are certain principles that we are not neutral on, which I think is very important. I think it's always going to be a challenge for the progressive media to lead the news agenda. When I mentioned earlier that when you asked me what is one of the challenges, and I said, well, it's the way the established press has such a firm grip on what is setting the agenda. And that can be frustrating, not because I want their approval, but because, I mean, for example, and I can talk a bit more about it later, Byline Times this last year broke a big story around the GB News presenter Dan Wootton. And I was just so disheartened by the lack of following up of that story by media outlets that have far more resources than an independent newspaper like Byline Times does, that can carry that burden of the legal threats and all the other threats you get with that kind of work. And by and large, they haven't followed that through, which I think is a disservice to the public interest. But I think we could all be better at doing that. But I think you have to be quite fearless with what you're putting out there, and that it, and also investigate, and that takes a lot of resources. As Priyanka was saying, media outlets, organizations only have so much that they can work with.
Tyranny is the absence of nuance is the brilliant quote, isn't it? And I think that's broadly right. So we're doomed to be nuanced and not polarizing. How does that any of that feel for you, Priyanka, in Bristol? I mean, do you inform much of the other media, whether it's TV media or the Evening Post or whatever? Do you have much of a knock-on impact? Have you?
I think we exist in a pretty specific lane as the Bristol Cable. We're also not overtly party political, but I think it's probably quite obvious where our politics are, and they're definitely in the left progressive side of
Yeah.
things. In Bristol, sometimes it's hard to resist what can feel a bit like an echo chamber. We've generally had a Labour council, and now it's a Green council, but Tories are very much in the minority. But I think sometimes what I've been aware of is it can make you a bit, yeah, it can make you a bit blinkered to the kind of views that are out there. So,
Yeah.
for example, a week after the Colson statue came down, there was a pretty huge All Lives Matter counter protest that happened. And going there and speaking to people and hearing the kind of like the anger, like really vitriolic anger that people had towards things like the Marxist media and the snowflake generation and things like that, that it did make me realize like, oh yeah, we can get a bit complacent in feeling like we are Bristol's voice and like this is what
Yeah.
Bristol thinks and how Bristol is this. So I think like trying to be aware of that is going to be quite difficult. But I really it really resonates what you're saying, Neil, about how frustrating it can be sometimes to always be the one taking the high road. I really do. We have this magazine in Bristol, a magazine. It's like it's printed on A4 bit of paper. It's called the Bristolian, and they call themselves the Smiter of the High and Mighty. It's basically an extremely it's a gossip rag, basically. And
Yeah.
it is so sensationalist, They'll have like a Bristol City Councillor. They had two Bristol City Councillors with the title, with the headline, Access of Evil. Like they're really over the top, but then people kind of love it. And I think there's something we can't deny it. There's something really entertaining about GB News, and it captures people and it speaks to people in a way that nuance is not as rabble-rousing, unfortunately, even if it might be the more like moral path to take. And I think we often speak in the Bristol Cable, also we do more investigative work, social justice issues, long form features. So that is what guides the kind of things that like public interest is what guides what we report on. But we very often ask, is it interesting to the public?
Yeah.
And I think are you for me, what is a useful we often look at Navarra Media, and I think they're quite interesting as like an outlet who are explicitly left wing in a way that the cable we would be maybe afraid to be, because we want to be a bit more, I don't know, we want to have like a bit of a mass appeal or not silo ourselves, so we're like implicitly left without explicitly saying that or having that as part of our messaging. And the fact that they do rely on, by their own admission, like personalities and personalities with big social media followings, and they do the majority of their reporting, it tends towards comment journalism as opposed to original reporting, and they do well for doing that. So I have been thinking, is there a way to kind of like capture the tactics of the right, and redirect it, rechannel it somehow?
Yeah, I think we've got some communication, tricks to learn, but we know that means always shape ends. You can't build a good society by doing it in a bad way. I'm afraid, so we have to be careful about this. Peter, I'm going to ask one more question, then over to the ones we've got in the chat. So I just want to kind of finish off this bit with asking both of you, is there stuff that could be done on a kind of a regulatory basis, both to promote your sort of, platforms, and also to limit the effect of, the big, privately owned media operators, which should give us a more plural, transparent, holding to account, or is it just about building up your, independent, owned, run public interest things? Is there something a new government could do to help rebalance, the effectiveness of, alternative media? I suppose whether it's kind of right wing or left wing, we shouldn't do it for right or left, but is there anything, Hardeep, that you'd like to see, done to put more wind in your sails?
Yeah, I mean, I think we as an independent media outlet sit within the wider media landscape, and without some reform of the wider landscape, you can't really tackle the challenges that we face as smaller outlets. I think on the issue of media reform, you're always hoping for some bold politics on this, because actually it's not a political issue. It shouldn't be seen as a political issue. The media is something that affects us all, that has significant repercussions for our democracy. And so it should be above politics in a
What
way.
does that look like? What would bold reform look like?
I think, I mean, I I'm not an expert on it, and also I'm a journalist, so it's not for me to say. It definitely should be, as we say, it definitely should be this or that. I think ideally, if there was a new Labour government, we would revisit the fact that the second part of the Leveson inquiry, which looked at the culture and the ethics and the practices of the British press in the wake of the phone hacking scandal, would revisit that. Because there were lots of questions that remain unanswered. There's lots of lessons that haven't been learned because they weren't excavated. So I think we need to look at that. I think there's an argument to be made for a commission, a cross-party commission to be set up to look at some of the options for the press. I mean, it's an anecdotal sort of thing, but if you're a doctor, and or a surgeon, and you conduct an operation and significant harm results, and that was because of something that you did with full intention, negligently or otherwise, you'd lose your license. You wouldn't be able to be practicing as a doctor thereafter. I think there is something to be said of the scrutiny and the accountability when big influential newspapers are putting stories out there, which do have repercussions for people's lives, the people that they're talking about, and for the public. And it's, I think a free press is extremely important, but I think we always have to look at the boundary between a free press doesn't mean the freedom to say whatever you like with whatever consequences, come what may. And I think we really need to look at that. I think there's also something to be said for politicians framing this issue, not of media reform, but about democracy. So, for example, the Labour Party has in recent days said a lot about corruption and cronyism. I mean, I don't see why the situation, especially with our established press and some of those influential tabloids, doesn't fit into that. So I think there has to be much more conversation about it. As always, it's a tricky issue for people. Politicians want to get elected and they don't want to face a bad press. But I will say this, I think come what may, the Labour Party is going to face a lot of they're going to get a lot of onslaught anyway from the established right-leaning media. So it depends what they have to decide is whether they want to be truly transformative or to just swim in the water that we're currently swimming in and perpetuate it. I would think, in my personal opinion, the latter course would be to great detriment to our country and our democracy.
I think that's right. I think that's brilliant. Thank you. What is there anything you'd like to see done to help, platforms like Bristol Cable?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's like a number of things in society at the moment where it sort of feels like it needs to be, dismantled completely and built back up again. But I would maybe refer people to the Cairncross Review, which was, although commissioned by Theresa May, it was a pretty good report into the sustainability, a sustainable future for journalism, and the cable were one of the people who gave evidence in that report. I think there has to be a breakup of these media monopolies. If it were up to me, it sounds a bit dictatorial, but some of them should just be shut down, like The Sun. I don't know. Some of these could do with just being erased. GB News, who's also the regulatory bodies for this, are clearly inefficient. If we are even allowing GB News to be in existence, what with it being such a direct pipeline from Tory politicians, serving Tory politicians to presenters, that's mad to me. And then, yeah, to recognize that journalism is a public good, and to have local journalism somewhat restored. And I think companies like Reach PLC, who keep local journalists on 20 grand and has a chief exec, Jim Mullen, on 4 million grand, 4 million a year, like there's something deeply, deeply unjust about that level of inequity in these kind of big umbrella networks like Reach, who just gut newsrooms for their shareholders and have ruined the quality of journalism by depending on advertisement. So yeah, I guess for me, local journalism is a very important part of the media reforms that need to happen.
Hello, Samuel here from the Compass office. I hope you're enjoying the discussion so far. It's Bloody Complicated is brought to you by Compass, and it's made possible by the support of our amazing members, like Eliza. Here's Eliza on why she joined the Compass community.
My name is Eliza. I've been a Compass member for about 3 or 4 years, I think. What drew me to Compass was the fact that it's cross-party and it's also not a party. I had a light bulb moment about elections, which was no one's going to win except the Tories under this system, and we have to work together. Having been previously a member of the Labour Party and then joining the Green Party, I really wanted to see parties working together, and we have people that are politicians, MPs, trade union leaders, etc. And it's quite level. There's no big hierarchy. It's quite an honest, open space where people come together. You will hear from people from all around the political spectrum actually debating the hard stuff. It's actually, let's find a solution to the problems that we have and let's do it together. We need this progressive alliance. And I would like to see people who are passionate about getting the Tories out in the next election and getting proportional representation in. Come and join Compass now and actually swell the movement, because without people, there's no power. And that's what we need right now.
Find out more about joining the Compass community at compassonline.org.uk/podcast. And now, back to the discussion.
Brilliant. I've gone on far too long. Peter, over to you, and get maybe 2 or 3 questions in, and hopefully we can get those ones out and responses before we finish at 7. So over to you, Peter. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to start with 3. And the first question is going to be from Sarah.
Hi. Before I post my question, I'd just like to thank both panellists for being so enthusiastic and positive. It's sorely needed at this time. So thank you for that. I posted a question asking if you could give examples of the sort of issues you've been able to write about because you're not mainstream, and also to perhaps think of a particular article you're proud of. I mean, that you could be proud of things in different ways, but I am suggesting an article that's made a particular impact. I know since I've posted it, you have mentioned some examples, but perhaps you could expand on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sarah. The next one is going to be from Claire.
I actually have written for Byline Times as well, obviously the local ones, Kent and Sussex, but not for a few months because I've had a disastrous house move. Anyway, I was wondering how we can get sort of people who aren't similar to us in their outlook. So perhaps people that are perhaps not left-wing or not centrist, people who are perhaps not progressives, to get into the practice of reading Byline Times. That's the first part of the question. The other thing is, I don't really feel that anything in the Byline Times is so outrageously left-wing. I just think it's moral and it's truthful. And I think it's very worrying that we label Byline Times or anything that's written that is considered a little bit dangerous as, dangerous meaning perhaps too outspoken or too left-wing, or, you know, I think that's a shame, because honestly, it's often the moral, it's a moral point of view and it's often the truth. Sorry, I've sort of incorporated 2 questions there that are related.
No worries. Thank you very much, Claire. Great questions. And the last one is going to be from James.
Yeah, so I also have written for Sussex Bylines, somewhere in the alternative firmament, I suppose. And I, you know, I have a feeling that maybe we are talking to our peer group, our silo, our demographic, you know, most of the time. And I'd like to have a discussion really in the wider sense about how can we expand the readership more actively. The statistics that we get suggest there are really considerable fluctuations between different articles and different issues. And it's a bit of a mystery as to why this is. And I sort of set the question in the context of, you know, the situation with the local press, which I suppose is much the same across the country. But, you know, here we have, you know, the Brighton Argus. It's a daily local paper. it's full of a lot of, you know, parochial stuff that I think there's the, which is not uninteresting, but the sales of it are apparently struggling, even though they have a lot of adverts in there. Apparently, you know, it really struggles financially. So, you know, it's difficult to understand. You get a better idea of the market for all for local news, I suppose, and how we can make you know, better impact on it.
Great question. Thank you, James.
Bab, over to Hardeep. Do you want to go first and answer any of those bits that you want to answer?
Yeah. So thank you for your question, Sarah. And and thank you for noting our enthusiasm, because I always say, you know, so easy to let that cynicism come in, and you can't. And I always say to, you know, journalists, good to be skeptical, but not cynical. If you're cynical, your mind is like this. You're not open anymore, and we have to stay open to learning, to being changed by things, and for the situation to change as well. In terms of some of the stories that Byline Times has been able to work on outside of the system of the established press, we like to say that it's sort of next year's headlines today. So, for example, the PPE contract scandal that has been brought to public attention now prominently through Michelle Moan. So this notion of these companies during the pandemic that were being given millions of pounds in COVID contracts to supply PPE, many of them had associations with the Conservative Party. We were reporting on that about three years ago, near when the pandemic began. It's a story we've consistently led the way on. And we're just glad we did the kind of groundwork for the established press to eventually come in and continue with it. Likewise, issues such as, so for example, threats to democracy in Britain, there's still not much that's done about looking at sort of Russian interference, for example, and attempts at it. In America, that was excavated quite a lot through the Mueller inquiry. Here in this country, the Conservatives, particularly under Boris Johnson, they were suppressing the Russia report, although it was eventually published, but it's still not sort of on people's radar. Another issue that we've really led on, and probably the story that as an editor I'm really proud that we published, was our investigation into the GB News presenter Dan Wootton last year. We always said without fear or favour. It has been a difficult story to get out there. We've had consistently legal threats. We've had threats from the We've had some physical threats as well. Dan Wootton might not be as well known as someone like Russell Brand, but he has held a number of prominent positions over the years as a journalist at the Mail, at the Sun, now suspended from GB News. He has a vast network of connections in the world of celebrity, in the world of monarchy, and the media. And I think, again, this notion that the wrongdoing that goes on culturally and in practice in our press is a historical issue that is to do with phone hacking. I think we need to be clear that the tactics may, the times may have changed. People aren't hacking phones anymore, but the sort of culture remains the same. And so tactics have evolved as to what's going on. And I was really proud we got that Dan Wootton story out there. As I said, not much support from the established press, which is, you know, we can only wonder why. And on a personal level, I've written a lot about sort of Byline Times has been a great platform for me to write about issues of identity. You know, there's so much written about identity politics and all this stuff. But I've written quite a lot about my background, both my parents, immigrants from India and Kenya, countries of the empire, voted for Brexit. And again, taking that nuanced approach of trying to understand and unpick and actually go a bit deeper to be an analysis that doesn't fit into one box or another. It's definitely this or it's definitely that. It's many things all at once, all the time. And so I am quite proud personally that a lot of people say that I helped illuminate some of their understanding about some identity issues with regards to that. I can pick up on some other questions, but I'd like to go to Priyanka first.
And then we'll go over to Priyanka.
Sorry, do you want me to continue?
Yeah, keep going, and then you know, okay. Pick out any other bits you want to answer.
Yeah, so there was also a question about our bubble Yeah. So how do we, I mean, it's something I talk about a lot with people, with my colleagues, my co-founders and executive editors. How do we spread the word about what we're doing? How do we get out of the usual cohort of people who would support us? I think, and I say this, and I don't think this is a pessimistic thing. I think it's quite pragmatic. And I think it is hopeful that if I was under the impression that Byline Times or the work I do could fundamentally shift everything, I would probably go to sleep crying every night, because as we know, the challenges that we face all around us in terms of the established media, in terms of the way our politics is going, it's a lot, you know, but I do think that we can help shift just a little bit. And that's why we're so important, because we are an alternative. And there are so many more independent media outlets now popping up. And together, I think we do drive a shift, which is important in itself. And that's what I think any of us can really do. I'm under no illusions that people who have beliefs that are the complete antithesis of Byline Times, for example, people who are okay with the denigration of the rule of law, for example, or attacks on our judiciary, or corrupting influences at the heart of government. If that's your bag, Byline Times is never going to be for you. And I know that. I'm not trying to get those people on board, but I do think there are a lot of other people at the center of politics, at the center right of politics, all the way to people who would consider themselves quite left in politics. There's a whole group of people there. And to those people, we need to try to spread the word. I do think going with a more pluralistic approach, not telling people what to think, giving them information, is the way to start doing that. And so our columnists include Peter Oborne, who for many years, you know, Boris Johnson was his editor at The Spectator magazine. He worked for The Mail. He worked for The Telegraph. He writes month in, month out for our newspaper. And I want to diversify that cohort even more. So we go all the way from the center right to even more left. And I think it has to be that pluralistic approach. That's how you get more people coming on board. But in terms of getting people who are the antithesis of kind of the values we stand for, I guess it's not going to be for them. And I'm okay with that, because I'm just doing my little bit. And I think that's all any of us can really do at the moment.
Lovely stuff. Priyanka, what do you want to answer out of any of that?
Maybe going on that, answering that point about the bubble, because I've sort of mentioned it before, and like ways to make sure that you're not totally confined to it. I think one of the things for us in terms of trying to reach a cross-section of people and not always feeling like you're just preaching to the choir, I think one importantly is structural. For example, there are no like barriers to access to our journalism, or we try not financially anyway. You know, it's just £1 a month. Everything is free to access. And also we're giving people a chance to shape the media as well. That's what they're investing in. We do also, as part of that, I think just ensuring a diversity of coverage, I think, is the way that I think we can appeal to the greatest cross-section of people. And you can do that when you're not, as Hardeep was saying, when you're not telling people what to think, where you're not being prescriptive in your coverage, but you're looking at kind of more universal issues. Like, we have written extensively about the housing problems in Bristol. We contributed to a database of rogue landlords, and kind of topics that like affects everyone every day. We did a lot on cladding, especially in like council housing, you know, stories which are very like everyday and reach a lot of people. I think people feel like quite invested in, and also that maybe gets like impacts for people. Like, we've reported on dodgy builders or like false companies who are conning people and fleecing people, and then as a result of our investigation, maybe people have got their money back. So I think like topics like this, trade union coverage, strike coverage, like things that appeal to like a greater breadth of people. Also personally running in the cable a scheme to diversify our freelancer base, to make sure that people who wouldn't necessarily think of themselves as journalists or reporters, but people who definitely have like expertise in their area or who have stories to tell feel like they can contribute to the cable. And we're running, as we have done before, a kind of media lab, like sessions on how to teach people, like ordinary Bristolians, like the kind of 101 of journalism so they can feel like partake in it a bit more. We also do super hyper local reporting called Area in Focus. So we have mapped out every single postcode that we intend to cover in Bristol and go there and speak to people really embed in the communities there to make sure you report on it. And then I guess maybe picking topics which are a bit controversial, which force you to like look at this, at the divide up close. And one of the examples is probably the All Lives Matter protest that I went to and reported at. Another was during lockdown. At some point we did a documentary about COVID, the conspiracy theory about COVID vaccines, and I think I was quite proud of that because what we managed to do, even though it's difficult to do, is like, how do you interact with people who were vaccine skeptical in a really kind, compassionate way without being like, without judgment, but also with the kind of public health risk awareness at the same time. So yeah, not shying away from those sort of controversial issues as well, which do divide people, and finding a more compassionate way through them.
Brilliant, brilliant. Let's finish up. Keep going, Priyanka. Just tell us a last line on why you're hopeful about the future of alternative media outlets like the Bristol Cable. What, you know, what keeps you going? What's the hope? You know, what's the light on the hill for alternative media?
I think what keeps me hopeful is that it is working. It might be slow, but we are progressing and there is appetite for it. And every time we get asked to speak somewhere on, or, you know, go to one of the investigative journalism kind of networks that exist in the country or independent news, like people look to the cable and think like, wow, it is possible, we could do it. There is a way not to rely on corporate funders or advertising revenue. You know, it is in the public interest and maybe people will fund that. And I think we are demonstrating that there is an alternative. And I think that is quite hopeful, really. We've just done this ad campaign, which was give Murdoch the finger, give the cable a fiver. We put these billboards up all over the city and we've had people like taking selfies in front of it, because I think it's a tagline that people can relate to, maybe in terms of feeling frustrated with the state of mainstream media and how corrupt it's become, and knowing that you can do something else.
Really nice. And Hardeep, what makes you hopeful?
Yeah, I just echo a lot of what Priyanka said. I mean, there's massive appetite out there. There's more of us than we think that are interested in nuance and things being complicated and proper investigative journalism and looking at things in an in-depth structural way. There are more of us than we think. And I think we need to remember that. And I won't become pessimistic or cynical. The job I do could easily lend itself to, as I said, having me in tears every day if I was to look at the state of things. But I think there is a lot of positivity out there. The highlight of the job is also you meet so many enthusiastic, committed, passionate people. And I think we have to always remain open to things will change. Nothing stays the same forever. And so we kind of have to move with the time, stay open, stay hopeful as well, and also always try to see where someone else is coming from. I think that really is important.
Fabulous. Look, great stuff. I mean, that was just a joy to listen to you both and hear these great examples and your enthusiasm, and like, all power to your elbows. You know, people sign up if you're in the, you don't have to be in the Bristol area to subscribe to the Bristol Cable. Nope. I'm sure I'm going to do it now and pay my pound at least, or if not more. And I love getting Byline Times. So Hardeep and Priyanka, thanks so much. That was just absolutely brilliant. And I'm sure people are going to love listening back to that, just as people on the call tonight love listening to you both. Thanks, Peter, and thanks everyone on the call tonight. To support the support from our members really matters to make these kind of conversations possible. So do think about joining Compass if you're listening to this, so you can join these calls live and put your own questions to our wonderful guests like the two we've had tonight. Tune in next time to It's Bloody Complicated on January the 23rd, when we'll be speaking to Paul Follows and Steve Williams from the Compass Group in Southwest Surrey, who have just been the most amazing group that have kind of brought all the progressives together in that area. They've taken over the council. They work in such wonderful ways. They don't even meet as different parties anymore. They kick the Tories out. And they've, you know, over the last 8 years, they've moved Southwest Surrey from 2017, when they slashed Jeremy Hunt's majority. It was one of the safest seats in the country for the Tories. And now it's one of the a marginal seat, just through the power of working together. And their story is absolutely fantastic. So please come along on the 23rd to listen to Paul, who leads the council for the Liberal Democrats, and Steve, who is the deputy, who's a Green Party member. And they're just fantastic. So it will be a wonderful podcast to come and listen to. So please come along to that. So as ever, thanks everyone tonight for being on the call. Thanks again, Bianca and Hardeep. That was just absolutely wonderful. I love meeting you and talking to you and hear about your work. And I look forward to supporting, reading and keeping up the conversation. So good night, everyone. Take care. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks' time.
So if you like what you've heard today and want to be part of a much more equal, democratic and sustainable future, a good society, then visit us at compassonline.org.uk/podcast, and you'll be able to join us live on future calls just like this one. You can tweet me at Neil, N-E-A-L underscore compass, or compass at compass office. And if you've enjoyed this week's episode, please give us a rating. It will help us reach more listeners in the future. And it's only fair that they know it's bloody complicated too.